is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Art generated by artificial intelligence is being created at breakneck speed, raising concerns about copyright infringement among many artists. But some artists are embracing AI, and five of them have work on display in a new exhibit called Yes, But Is It Art? The exhibit runs through June 17th at Studio Kroner in downtown Cincinnati. Joining me now to discuss the creative possibilities, plus the legal and ethical implications of creating art using AI, are Studio Kroner gallery owner Paul Kroner. Welcome, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. Artist Judy Bomarito, thanks for being here, Judy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Artist Alan Brown, welcome, Alan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Certainly, and Wood, Heron & Evans LLP partner Sean Owens, thanks for being here, Sean.
Happy to be here.
Wood, Heron & Evans LLP is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Are you a digital artist with questions or opinions about AI art? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Paul, could you start by explaining the kind of origin story for this exhibit? My understanding is maybe Alan kind of approached you, and at first you were like, no. Tell us about that.
Exactly. It's about a year ago, late summer of last year, I believe, Alan came into the studio to show me his work, and he had four bodies of work, and the last body of work he had was AI-generated art, which I had no concept of. And I looked at him and I was like, what are you talking about? And it sort of weirded me out, you know? he likes to say I brushed him off, but I went home and called my friends and talked to my partner and was like, oh man, now I need to do a show about this because this is going to be the next thing. And then, you know, not soon after that, you know, I read somewhere that the MoMA up in New York had sold off a Francis Bacon and a Pierre Bonnard painting, amongst other paintings, to make way for digital art to happen. I was like, okay, this is going to happen soon.
Yeah. I guess if MoMA can get in on it, maybe Studio Kroner can.
I thought maybe I could jump on that bandwagon.
There you go. Yeah. So, Alan, what was it that made you think this was really time to kind of showcase and explore this art?
Well, I'd like to say that I had this aha moment and I knew this was right, but I really didn't because I didn't know how well accepted it would be. I'd read a lot of the scuttlebutt on the internet with the haters out there who didn't believe it was legitimate, and I started playing around and I thought, wow, this is incredible. I can do so much more than I could do before, and I was already doing digital art, so this just, it was a natural step for me.
Gotcha. It sounds like you viewed it as a really another tool to use for your art.
That is actually exactly what I view it to be. It's a tool, and I can choose how I use it, I can choose when I can use it, and I can choose what kind of results I'm looking for.
Judy, I'm going to ask you this hard technical question. Tell me about the nuts and bolts of the AI that you use for your art, and can you explain in the simplest way possible how AI generates the art? It sounds like it's a lot more complex than kind of copying and pasting from stuff.
Yes, there's various ways of getting the results that you want, and sometimes the results aren't exactly what you anticipate, and that in itself creates some of the mystique as far as where you go with it. But for me, I do use Midjourney, and I end up doing very conceptual and specific prompts based on how I want the work to come out. For example, if I will not say something like in the style of Picasso, but I might say cubist form. So it gives me a general result on how the image is going to come out. And then there's a lot of like very personal words. A lot of the work that I do really revolves around the foundation of the relationship that I shared with my mother, who was mentally ill. So there's things that I present to the prompt that are connected to sort of like isolation and certain things like that. So it definitely takes you in a direction that you may not have anticipated in the beginning, and then you have to keep pushing it. For me specifically, I like to get a result that I'm hoping to get, not just kind of haphazardly getting the result. So for me, it takes some time to really get the feel, because I really think it's an extension of my own creativity, and also in my work, an extension of my soul, because I'm very personal with my work.
Yeah. Alan, what's your understanding about how the technology, how these programs, well, first, which one do you use? I don't know if you also use Midjourney, but what's your understanding of how it kind of scrapes the internet and gets trained?
That's actually probably a better Sean question
okay.
than it is an Alan question. But I will tell you, I wanted to add one thing onto Judy's, which is, for me, it's a very iterative process. So I'll try, it all uses words, prompts, to help generate the image. And it's a matter of trying things and finding which words get you where you want to go and which words aren't working successfully.
And Alan, I understand you're very influenced by Edward Hopper. How do you make AI art with that kind of influence in mind?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I assume you don't say, give me a Hopper on this or that.
No, I don't. And actually, my methodology is kind of like cooking. I come up with a recipe of different styles that I'm interested in, mush them together, stir them up, and see what happens, and then carry on from there. So there are some classical artists who will start, for instance, with a sketch and go from the sketch to finished art. I go, in this case, I start with words and see where it takes me.
Interesting. Sean, can you talk a little bit about sort of how the technology works and scrapes and learns?
Yeah, so the platforms have to, you know, be trained on how to generate new content. So most of the platforms review hundreds of millions or billions of images across the internet, typically without permission or any sort of license. And what the software remembers is the location of individual pixels in those images, and that they tie them to keywords that are also associated with those images. And so after reviewing millions and millions and millions of images, the software, quote, learns that, oh, if this prompt is fed into it, then a pixel of this color should go in this location. And after running through, you know, numerous iterations of this, you end up with new generated results that can sometimes be quite remarkable.
So what are the legal implications of something like that? Can AI art be copyrighted? Can the prompts that you enter be copyrighted?
So depending upon where you are in this, the current state of the law is either terrifying or very exciting because we don't know the answers to a lot of these questions. But under current law, the Copyright Office has stated that AI-generated art is not protected under copyright. So it does not receive the same kind of protections that a painting or a photograph, a traditional type of art, would. And the reason for that is because the copyright only provides protection for works of human authorships, not in this case the works of AI-generated artwork. As for whether or not the prompts would be protected, again, their current position is that those really are just the same as ideas, concepts, like me telling an artist, hey, artist, make me a painting of a cat. I don't have any protection over what the artist ultimately produces because it's just the prompt, it's the idea, it's the concept. Copyright protects the expression, not the underlying ideas.
Great choice, by the way. I'm a crazy cat lady. That was right up my alley. I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about the legal and ethical implications of creating art using AI and also the aesthetics of that art. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Paul, what are your thoughts? Should we, as consumers of art, have the right to know if it's AI generated? Is that something that should be disclosed by the artist?
You know, that's a great question. I've gone back and forth on it, and I think I'd like to know personally. I mean, I'd like to know that this is an oil painting and not an acrylic painting because I know how those work, how different they are to work with as an artist. And they matter to me for some reason, technically. But I don't, you know, the end result, you know, if it's expressing something, I think Judy's work, especially where she's really tapping into an emotional state of herself. She talks about putting her soul into her work. The technical aspect of that is merely a means to get to the end of her self-expression. And I think if you're combining all that, you know, combining your skills and your intent and your heart and your mind together, and you come out with that, then it doesn't really matter how it's been done. It only matters what it's expressing and what it's communicating to yourself as the artist and the viewer who's witnessing and taking in the work.
What do you think, Judy? Do you feel like as an artist you need to tell people, hey, this was generated using AI, or do you think that's none of their business?
No, I think I agree with what Paul said. I believe that it is interesting. I'm photography is my main discipline, and this is an extension. I try to do things more photographically, like somebody else might be more painterly with their techniques. So I do try to mimic the idea of a photograph. So some of the prompts that I use are based on skills that I have as a photographer. So they might be depth of field or specific type of light quality. And so those things are how I collectively get the result. And I think that the viewer should know that this was not, you know, a camera obscura. This was an AI generated image. This was, because as a photographer, I would want to know if something was a Polaroid or a print or made with a specific kind of camera might be interesting, or printed on a specific type of paper. So it is definitely another tool to get the end result.
Interesting. So when you're exhibiting your art, you let your viewers know, hey, this was created using AI.
Absolutely. I think that it's something that people would be interested in knowing.
What do you think, Alan?
Well, if you talk to my wife, she feels I talk about it way, way, way too much. but from my perspective, I think it's irrelevant what tools I've used. The real decision is, does the audience like it or not? And if they like it, to me, it's immaterial how I got there.
Sean, should an artist have to disclose to a client if a client comes to them and says, hey, you know, we've got this contract for you to produce this artwork for a magazine or for an office or for whatever purpose, should an artist have to disclose that to a client?
So it's going to come down to the specific text of that contract. But, you know, contracts certainly could require that AI-generated artwork not be included in a final product. And there can be a variety of reasons for that. One, potential risk. Two, ownership issues, protectability, that sort of thing. So typically, best practice would be to clarify in the contract whether it can or cannot be used or not.
Mm. So no surprises later. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment, and later in the program, we'll hear about an opera called The Knock that will make its world stage premiere here in Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We continue our conversation about the aesthetics and the legal and ethical implications of creating art using AI. My guests are Studio Kroner gallery owner Paul Kroner, artist Junie Bomarino, artist Alan Brown, and Wood, Heron & Evans LLP partner Sean Owens. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Alan, we've already started seeing some really well-known magazines using AI illustrations instead of employing illustrators. Do you, as an artist, have concerns about that?
Well, I have to look back to my origins, which was photography. And photography in the 1800s was that kind of technological advancement that classical artists said was invalid, that couldn't really be called art. And it took many, many years for photography to be accepted as an art form. And, you know, so here I am again going down a similar kind of path where the established artists, traditional artists, have an issue with it. And I understand that issue.
What do you think, Judy?
Yeah, I agree. This is definitely reminiscent of the early days of digital, being that the authenticity of the image and how it's going to be presented. So we're definitely at the same point, I think, with AI.
What about the ethical implications that an artist, I know one of the artists you have in your exhibition is Terry Campbell, and his work, he's traditionally a photographer, he's used models and makeup artists and all that, but with AI, he doesn't need to hire a model necessarily or a set designer. Paul, do you think AI is putting people like that out of work? And what about these issues of kind of needing consent, you know, that you don't have to get that from a computer-generated face?
Yeah, it's really changing the nature of his work, as he spoke about at the artist talk or talk last week. It is going to put people out of work, but as he talked about, you know, AI will not take your job, but somebody who knows AI will take your job. And so we've got another skill that people can choose to learn or not, and how they use it, what the vision of their creativity is really going to be the testament of their artistry in moving on, because that's very much like contemporary art, where so much of it is about the vision rather than the execution. So I think this is another step along that path.
Yeah. Alan, talk to us a little bit more about your vision, what you're trying to convey through your art and really express through the AI-generated art in particular.
Well, I guess the easiest way I can put it is, for me, AI lets me explore beyond my personal skill sets and create new skill sets. And so for me, there's an excitement about that that I really, really enjoy. As far as how it really enhances my work, I can explore where I couldn't explore before.
Okay. Judy, tell us a little bit more about your art. Talk a little bit more in depth about your work and the messages behind it and how AI really helps you explore those messages more deeply.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad to, because that's really where I feel very confident in saying that these images are my own, because a lot of people have to understand that when you're working in AI, you may quite likely get something right out generated that you think is fantastic. But for myself, I sometimes need to take those images into Photoshop and manipulate them a little bit more so that they become a little more of my own. So it's not unlikely that I will add more textures or add a few images together and use different layers to create my own unique piece. So I feel pretty confident in saying that this is not somebody else's work, it's my own. And so because my work is so connected to my emotion and it's so personal, I really need to sometimes do specific things. And AI doesn't always come up with that answer for me. Sometimes my knowledge of being an artist, being a photographer, comes in play. It's important. It's an important aspect of being an artist. And so that's why using all of these techniques becomes really an important facet of the work.
Sean, does that make a difference when it comes to copyright, if an artist adds their own techniques or layers of techniques to something that AI has generated?
Yeah, it absolutely can. So if you just have a raw piece of AI-generated art, that's not going to receive the copyright protection that I mentioned earlier. But if the artist then adds their own original art to it, if they select and arrange AI artwork in a particularly, original manner, then those aspects of it, the new things that the artist added, could receive protection. But the underlying raw material will not have protection still.
I want to ask you too, Sean, there have been lawsuits filed over AI and an artist saying, hey, my art was scraped. I didn't consent to that. I wasn't paid anything. Talk to us a little bit about the questions these lawsuits are raising and what it could mean for AI artists and for artists who don't use AI in their work.
Yeah, so the big question is whether or not the fact that the platforms scraped all of these images to be trained constituted a fair use under copyright law, whether they were permitted to do that without getting permission or a license from all of these artists. That is working its way through the courts. They're brand new lawsuits. We don't know exactly how that's going to turn out. But we have seen some platforms already respond to it by developing their own AI-trained platforms that are, quote, responsibly trained. So they're trained only on artwork that has been licensed and that they are trying to arrange for compensation to then flow to the original owners of those artworks.
That's got to be really complicated, though. Does that mean that the original artist, so to speak, whose work was scraped, that the burden of proof is on them to say, hey, look, that came from me because of, look at these, and kind of convince a court that of the similarities or the...
Potentially, yes. Now, sometimes one of the lawsuits involves Getty, the large image ownership database, and they were able to identify AI-generated artwork that was based on some of theirs because it recreated the Getty watermark that appears on all of their
kind of a dead giveaway there, huh?
Right. Now, the AI software didn't understand that that was the Getty watermark. It just understood that after looking at millions of photographs, it thought a watermark was supposed, or something that looked like a watermark, was supposed to go on those photographs. But Getty and the other owners are arguing that by, again, using these to train the software, that required permission. And they're happy to work with these platforms. You know, Getty would be happy to work with them. They just want to make sure that there are proper permissions in place.
And, you know, we talked about how these cases are working their way through the courts. There was a Supreme Court decision, a U.S. Supreme Court decision, handed down last month that related to not AI-generated art, but an Andy Warhol painting that was rooted in an original photograph. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and whether you think it'll have any implications for AI art?
Yeah, so that case asked whether that particular usage of a photograph of Prince, which was then used by Andy Warhol to create a derivative work, which was then reproduced repeatedly, whether that constituted a fair use. And that is a brand new decision, and it's always important when the Supreme Court talks about any particular topic, but we're not sure exactly how much of an impact, if any, that's going to have on this situation. At the moment, most commentators think that was a pretty narrow decision, but we'll see.
Paul, do you think this all changes who is an artist, kind of the definition of artist?
I think it's going to be Wild, Wild West for a while. I keep going back. I'm a graphic designer as well, and I keep going back to the advent of the computers in the graphic design world where everybody became a graphic designer. And we were inundated by a lot of poor design and a lot of poor communications. I think we're going to be inundated by a lot of artwork that's being generated by people who do one prompt, put it out, and that's their artwork. They're not going deeper into it and really trying to find themselves in the work and the soul in the work. And so I think we're going to get a lot of people who call themselves artists, but I'm not really sure they will be.
Judy, do you think there's any risk that AI will make artists who create art by hand kind of obsolete?
That's an interesting question. I don't think so. I think there will always be a place for the crafts of art, so to speak, the visual or the tangible, let's say, for example, a collage artist that uses materials. I think there's still going to be a need for that. We thought back in the day when photography was being replaced by the digital camera, that the analog camera would be gone, and it's not. It's still here. It's just taken on a different derivative. We don't use the film camera for commercial purposes now. It's a fine art tool. Mm-hmm. So I believe that the tangible art will always have a place.
What do you think, Alan?
I think that, I was thinking as Judy was talking that I remember when Photoshop came out in the early 90s, people said, oh, you're not an artist, you're just pushing a button. And
right.
I'm thinking, well, I'm using my hands, I'm using my brain, I'm using my eyes. Mm-hmm. Isn't that something?
There you go.
That would be my issue.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with Studio Kroner gallery owner Paul Kroner, artist Judy Bomarito, artist Alan Brown, and Wood, Heron & Evans LLP partner Sean Owens. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The exhibit Yes, But Is It Art? Runs through June 17th at Studio Kroner. And up next, we're going to hear about an opera called The Knock that will make its world stage premiere here in Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition.